This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for listening to the Evening Edition. So here's the thing about Woody Allen. There is no middle ground. The man and his art do not inspire indifference in any way. You either love his movies or hate his movies. It's really that simple. But like him or loathe him, one can't help but be curious about what makes him tick. About his philosophy behind the comedy. I know I'm curious about all those things, which is why I'm thankful for Finding the Funny, where Ezra speaks to Mark T. Conard, an associate professor of philosophy at Marymount Manhattan College in New York, all in an attempt at addressing my curiosities about Woody Allen. Go listen to the show. It's good, it's comedic, it's cinematic, it's all philosophical-like. Just log on to bfm.my and search for Woody Allen.
Good evening, folks. It's the Evening Edition. I'm Ezra Zaid, and tonight we'll be speaking about youth unemployment in Malaysia. We have some stats here. Consulting firm McKinsey, they've claimed that young people today are three times as likely as their parents to be out of work. Unemployed youths make up 60% of all unemployed workers. And in fact, a major concern in Malaysia is the high ratio of youth between about 15 to 24 years of age unemployed to overall unemployment. Speaking to us on this issue tonight, we have Stephen Sim, MP for Bukit Mutajam, as well as Sharina Hisham from My Harapan. Folks, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So fill me in on this. How big of an issue is unemployment and how concerned should we be?
Ezra, you have given the stats. 60% of all unemployed persons in Malaysia are young Malaysians, specifically within the age of 15 to 24. But even, I would argue, below the age of 30, we are talking about at least 11% of youth unemployment in our country. And this is compared to our neighbouring countries such as Thailand, which is 2.8, Singapore 6.7, Japan 8.0, and South Korea 10.1. So in that sense, the issue of youth unemployment, it's big here in this country.
Sharina, what else do we know about this issue?
Well, through the engagements that we've had with the youth as well as our corporate partners, we do see that it is an issue. And how we see it is because for example, even coming for interviews, they will say they'll be coming, but they won't, and things like that. That's just simple, basic of etiquette of coming in for interview to get employed. But other than that, with the feedback that we've got, a lot of the youth nowadays lack at least the basic skills like communication itself. Other than that would be the creative thinking, critical, solving problems and things like that. So it is an issue because, you know, Malaysian population itself, 60%, a little bit more than 60% of them are below the age of 35. So there is a need to do something about it because they are the ones who will be ruling or running the country in future. So that's where we come in as well to hopefully sort things out in a sense of assisting, trying to get them to be employed or giving them the right skills to be employed.
Tell us a little bit more about your organisation, My Harapan, and how it is involved with this issue of employment.
Okay, our mission is developing wholesome, independent youth. So we do it through youth development itself. So with youth development, as you know, is huge. It can be through entrepreneurship, sports, volunteerism. But ours is more specific to social entrepreneurship because at the end of the day, with entrepreneurship, they can be their own boss. And social entrepreneurship itself, it will include the communities and to also provide jobs for the inclusive communities as well. So that's one. But at the end of the day also, if they don't end up being a social entrepreneur, we know that it will be joining corporates or organization with a mind of a socially responsible employee. The kind of projects or programs that we have is more on project management, which involves communication skills, leadership skills, decision-making, design thinking, and yeah.
Some of the skills that will hopefully connect the dots for a lot of people who are seeking employment. Yeah. Stephen, you've been quite passionate about this issue. You've written quite a bit on it. What first got you engaged on this issue?
I think mainly because I'm part of the young population of Malaysia. We have to know that 70% of Malaysians are actually below the age of 40. So we are talking about a huge population. We are talking about a huge percentage of Malaysians here. And whatever affects them in terms of employment, in terms of the economy, affects the country as a whole. So that was why I'm keen and to discuss and also to advocate this issue.
So off the bat, I mean, what are some of the key issues as to why youths are not being employed? I mean, why is it the case? I mean, was this the case maybe for a generation ago, or has that changed because of, you know, a variety of things? I imagine social economic factors, technology and disruptions happening within the market. What could that be?
I think the key thing here is, and you get this sense when you speak to young people and employers, that our young people are actually trained for a world that does not exist, you know. And this is actually confirmed by surveys and studies and reports. A 2014 World Bank report states that 62% of firms in Malaysia complain of difficulty in finding workers, even though they have the job available, because there's just a gap between skills taught in universities, skills taught in schools, and the demand of the market. So I think the big issue here is training, education.
It's really interesting because I'm trying to think about, you know, that period of time, you know, prior to, you know, going to university and even after graduating right. from college or university, you don't really have a sense as to what is out there in the job market and what exactly can you do that will give you a sense of passion and objective, but also, you know, put some money into your pocket. Do younger folks now have a better idea, or are there just too many choices? Are they too choosy? What's the main gap here?
Yeah, if I can jump in on that. I'm glad that you asked that question, actually, because throughout our work with the engagement with the youth themselves, prior to this, we've been working with youth between the age of 16 to 25 and above 25 to 35, maybe just on mentoring purposes as a peer-to-peer mentoring and stuff like that. But throughout the work that we've done, we do find that there is a need to go a bit younger, because you were mentioning about passion and finding themselves. So a lot of the youth that we've engaged with as well, they don't really know what they want in life yet, if I may say that.
Sure.
But yes, yeah. So basically, a lot of them are still doing work that probably will be made into a professional job, like lawyers or doctors and things like that. But it's not necessarily their passion. So we've met with a youth who are so good at a project that they are doing, an initiative that they're doing that is scalable and can be sustained through a sustainable business model. But he's an engineering background. And so, you know, is also the parents wanting him to make sure that he does an engineering job. So that's one thing, you know, having parents not understanding their passion and also not understanding or not knowing their passion at a younger age so that they can find the right path.
I love this. Are parents part of the problem as well?
Well, I think it's great to deal with individual aspirations when it comes to youth and employment and jobs. But at the same time, I would like to bring the picture up at a more macro level, at a systemic level, in the sense that, like what I say, education, number one, but also youth are seen as more replaceable, especially when times are bad. They are the first to be laid off and they are the last to be hired, mainly because of a culture that do not appreciate the creative energy, the critical energy of youth. But on the other hand, within this economy that depends on low-skilled, cheap migrant laborers,
sure.
we are looking at a competition to the bottom, really. If I can hire somebody at for an entry-level job, a low-skilled and a cheap migrant worker, why would I want to hire local youth? So we are not just talking about youth going into professional sector, but also youth at the lower end of the job spectrum.
Yeah, there are a variety of jobs that Malaysians at large are not willing to do.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to continue talking about this huge issue of youth unemployment in Malaysia. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Boleh for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, folks. It's the Evening Edition. I'm Ezra Zaid, and in the studio with me, Stephen Sim, MP for Bukit Matajam, as well as Sharina Hisham, Senior Executive for Business Development from My Harapan. We're speaking about youth unemployment in the country. And just before the break, we spoke a little bit about, I guess, the options available and what companies and entrepreneurs are looking for when they seek a job. I guess wages has always been an issue. You know, in this country, we've got issues related to minimum wage. We've got issues related to, you know, migrant workers who are being paid practically peanuts for a lot of jobs that are dangerous and undesirable.
And that makes them more attractive compared to our you know, our youth.
Yeah. So how do we sort of reconcile some of these huge issues? Because I think there is also another problem. There's this problem about a lot of young folks, you know, just looking on their social media feed, seeing, you know, every other 20-year-old becoming a millionaire, billionaire. And it creates this impression that, well, you know, I guess I'll just hold out for that, you know, particular moment. And is there a gap between reality and what you need to really work hard for? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll jump in with that. Youth nowadays, they want to find that easy way out or easy way to become somebody. Also, again, with Maharapan engagements with the youth, we have seen or we have engaged with the youth who we see that very particularly in deciding on what they want. We have offered opportunities for them to better themselves in terms of even increment in salaries, but it's just not appealing to them with some jobs. And other than that, it's also the fact that they want it their way in terms of working hours, being laid back, or working from home and stuff like that. But, you know, having to get those kind of opportunities or perks, you got to have the right skills to be able to demand for that. So, yeah, one is they want to be somebody very really quickly, and they're not willing to put in the efforts itself having new skills or, for instance, getting the right skills for whatever that they are demanding from.
About that, I think on the other hand, it is not wrong to have aspirations. And perhaps it is not just about fine-tuning the expectation of the young people, but also fine-tuning how we look at jobs today. I think technological advances and stuff like this actually makes a lot of jobs different from during the time of our parents. So perhaps it is also, we should also require a shift of paradigm from the perspective of the employer and the government to align with the kind of aspiration. Because what we need to do here is to tap into the creative energy, into the youthful energy of the young people, not to dampen their aspiration just because they have higher expectation than our parents.
Why be, since you mentioned government, I mean, what is government doing right and what is it doing wrong when it comes to this issue? Is it tackling it in the most forthright and progressive way possible?
I think, firstly, one of the key issues that I have been highlighting in Parliament is the lack of data in this area. I've been asking and raising the issue of youth unemployment as well as another key issue, underemployment. This is another whole area by itself. But the problem is we do not get enough data. For example, we do not know how many youth between the age of 15 to 24 who are not in the job market, but whether they are not in the job market because of other reasons. For example, they are continuing their studies or they are in some sort of training. You know, we do not have enough data to deal with this issue. And therefore, policy making is very difficult. On the other hand, there is also a persistent stubbornness of the government to deal with the quality of our education system. I mean, I want to point out, this is something good that the government have done. They have amended the Education Act 1996 to upgrade vocational school into vocational colleges. And give it related resources. This is good, but the problem we are facing here today is not the lack of tertiary institution. We have got I don't know about 20 public universities and over 300 private colleges and universities. And we are producing about 200,000 graduates every year. So the problem is not the lack of institution, but the problem is the quality of those institutions. It is more systemic than just upgrading vocational colleges. But I think there are directions. There are directions by the government. For example, the vocational colleges, entrepreneur training, and also supporting organizations such as My Harapan. But more should be done. And all of it should start with at least having the right information about youth and employment.
Well, what's really interesting about that is, you know, this issue of the number of graduates. And we've seen that, you know, increase, especially for female graduates. We see more female graduates than male graduates from public and private universities.
Right.
Yet once they graduate and they're entering into the workforce, that turnover rate as to how many people are actually getting jobs, it's not proportionate, is it?
Female unemployment is another whole issue by itself. As you've rightly pointed out, there are more women in the university today, not just at the undergraduate level, but at the graduate level as well, the master's level. But it does not translate into women in senior position, in management position. And there are a whole bunch of factors.
So what's positive in the job market? What are we seeing that's positive that we can see? Well, there is some sort of silver lining that's happening. Are there sort of some, you know, small SMEs that are doing things differently to shake things up? Or are there some big corporations or GLCs that have been trying to address this in their own specific way?
We do see a little bit of that. There is a gap between the senior management and the junior ones coming in terms of mindset and how they do things at, within the corporation itself. So we do see some corporations who are actually thinking out of the box and trying to bridge that gap as well. So that's one good thing into accepting the younger generation's ideas.
But that gap, I'm just curious, like, that gap will always exist from generation to generation. I'm just wondering, are we doing a better job at it now than perhaps the baby boomers did with Gen X perhaps, and now Gen X has to do with Gen Y? I don't know. I'm just trying to see, is there something fundamentally different that needs to be addressed?
I think, yes, there is a gap in every generation itself. So I think at the end of the day, it's education itself, one of the pillars that I think is the most main fundamental change that we need. If I may add to what Stephen was talking about the government or work and everything, there are a lot of platforms for youth to get skills and funding and workshops and everything, even for free. But the issue is also, how are you going to ensure that it's sustained? How are you going to ensure that they actually use those skills into practice? How are they going to, are they doing it, or how are they going to do it? What's the next step? So, with MyHarapan, we ensure that, we want to give you skills in project management, and then we do provide funding so that you can actually do something about it if you want to. But we do have that, and we also have mentoring so that they can further hone their skills itself. With graduates, the fundamental change is probably the education itself. Maybe there's a lot of talks about how the institution has been the longest in history, right? Some things needs to be changed in terms of making it a ground for churning out skilled youth instead of just academic focus. And corporates themselves, I believe that, they should speak to academicians in order to be able to share what they want.
And foster closer relationships.
Yes, and bridge that gap itself.
And Stephen, what are some of the long-term consequences that you're concerned about, if this pattern continues?
I think one of the key thing, and this has been observed in research environment, is the what we call the wage scar, or rather economic scar, on young people. Basically meaning a young person today who is unemployed, 10 years down the road, he may not get as much as he can out of employment compared to if he is employed today. And that affects the society, not just individually, but the society. And we are not even talking about social costs, welfare costs by the government, etc. So there is a long-term repercussion. And we are talking about 70% of the population. If a lot of young people are not entering the job market for whatever reason, then we are not utilizing or maximizing our human resources, precious human resources of the country.
Folks, we're going to continue talking about youth unemployment in Malaysia with my guests, Stephen Sim, MP for Bukit Matajam, as well as Sharina Hisham, Senior Executive for Business Development from the organization MyHarapan. Folks, it's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
So you're almost done with this podcast and you've got another 30 minutes or so to kill on the treadmill. What better way to while away the time than by listening to Ezra Zayed wax philosophical about the comedy of Woody Allen? Go listen to Finding the Funny. Just log on to bfm.my and search for Woody Allen.
It's the evening edition. I'm Ezra Zayed, and tonight in the studio, we've been speaking to Stephen Sim, MP for Bukit Mertajam, as well as Sharina Hisham, Senior Executive for Business Development from MyHarapan. One of the main things that I've found terribly valuable when entering the job market was to try and do different internships or different part-time jobs. And I'm wondering whether that has changed in a big way in the country, because we're seeing a lot more internships take place, from university to companies, or even for organizations themselves looking for interns that are hungry to do a particular job. Is that something that's a positive that we're seeing, or is that just something just on the side?
I think it's positive. There are a lot more opportunities for what I call pre-employment work, such as internship or industrial training. And by and large, I think the youth are actually receiving this quite well. But my concern here is young people who have no access to these things.
Right.
Young people who have no access to... For example, I see BFM is a great outfit for young people. And this is what I mean, how employer has fine-tuned the job work environment to suit the trend of time, tapping into young energy, young creativity. But I'm concerned about people who have no access to this thing. People who have no access to, for example, entrepreneurship funds by the government, youth in the rural areas, youth who are not graduates.
What options are available to them then?
There are a lot of options actually, but the problem is accessibility. I think, and I appreciate organizations like My Harapan, grassroots organization who goes down to the ground to reach out to these people. And I think it's very important that we are not just speaking to young people in the urban area, but also in rural areas as well.
So Sharina, when we are trying to deal with an issue like accessibility for folks who don't have that access into either internships or job opportunities, how do we bridge that gap and what is being done?
Okay, I'll give you an example of what we have done in the past. One of it is actually the work we did with the urban poor youth. I know it's not real, but it's something similar to other projects that we've done. So, with the urban poor youth, they have their own interest. They've got their own attitude towards life and everything. So it's not easy to earn their trust. That's one thing. So when we first started, we tried to engage with them. We hit a wall. So we were giving them training and workshops. That is not what they want. So in the end, we also have our own research department in My Harapan. So we've done a bit of a research focus group and ethnography itself with the PPR youth, which is the youth from the Project Perumahan Rakyat, the low-cost housing.
Sure.
So we find that there are more interest in sports, arts, and things like that. So with that, the vehicle that we've decided on to giving them the skills that they should have is through theatre. So what we've done in the past is we got them involved in a theatre project where they were trained for about 6 months, speaking, confident.
And how young are these kids are we talking about?
From the age of 14 to 17. And, some of them are not in school. One, because they're illiterate as well, and two, but they're really good at acting and expressing. But we got to reach a certain note before we can actually see that, yeah. But there is interest, and some of them, they're not in school because they're helping their parents out as well. So we would prefer for them to be in schools, but in the meantime, this is what we are doing for them. So giving them the skills through theatre itself. So hopefully, they don't just, in the end, instead of just working in a supermarket or, they can actually take up musical theatres or whatever, or even with the confidence that they've got, they can actually become call centers. They work in call centres, which will give them even more income itself. Those are the things that we try to look out for in terms of giving them the transfer knowledge or accessibility to giving them skills and opportunities,
No, because I'm very fascinated about that, because I've seen examples with, folks who, once they are encouraged that they can actually do something, it actually defeats apathy in a huge way. But apathy, due to circumstance and due to all sorts of different factors, it's a very strong thing to defeat. Yeah. And it feels like, you're always on the back foot when you're trying to tackle something like that.
Yep. In fact, I think that I really like what you did with the youth in the PPR. I think any approach to deal with youth unemployment must not treat young people like Santa's elf or some kind of economic zombies, pawns, which is mainly to fuel the economy or to give plenty of energy to the industry. No. I think what we should do is we should allow their young and creative energy to be to permeate other areas of the society as well. We should allow them to, I mean, to deal with the youth is not just about job alone, but about a more dignified life, about the aspiration, about arts, music, sports. And what about youth voice in policymaking in the government. I think when we're talking about the economy as a whole, when we're talking about employment as a whole, there's the voice of youth comes in to be a part of the consideration.
It's usually
this is very important.
It's usually an older representative that's of right, the youth right, that, right. that is involved in
I'm
that.
I'm the youngest in parliament and I'm 33. So...
Yeah. And so, what about entrepreneurship? You know, we're seeing, at least in urban areas, there's this huge boom that's happening with a lot of people sort of starting up their own businesses, giving things a try. Technology has played a part in making it a little bit more accessible for people to do so. Is that a silver bullet when it comes to dealing with this issue of unemployment?
I think it's important. Yeah, it's important. But... every program has a limitation in the sense that we should look into the accessibility, like I say just now. It's not just about putting up the programs. I think there are a lot of programs, especially entrepreneurship programs, especially internship programs. But the question now is whether the youth are being made aware or they are empowered to take on and participate in these programs.
I also think, you know, what's the worst problem about it? It's, you know, when you're about... people ask you this question when you're 13, 14, 15, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always thought that was the most ridiculous question ever because you're meant to have this answer that, oh, well, I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be a doctor. No, you're going to have 5 failed jobs before you actually arrive at a job that you actually are good at, that you actually like it. And I think that has changed dramatically, you know, for at least from previous generations. And, you know, every failure now is actually a step closer towards finding something that you actually
That's
want
right.
to do.
That's right.
And so what's the plan moving forward? What is My Harapan doing? Are there any particular programs that you're looking forward to?
We are actually, currently we are actually, we have the Social Business Challenge, which is more on creating social businesses. With entrepreneurship itself, you know that you will be able to create jobs. So with social entrepreneurship, as you know, it's traditional business on one hand and charity on the other side, combine it together, that's social entrepreneurship. So with the focus of solving social problem and sustaining through sustainable business model. So that's what we are encouraging the youth to do now. We would like to share more on social entrepreneurship, how we can share ideas and get the youth to start thinking about social entrepreneurship and create more jobs for themselves and also their peers. You know, having that sustainable and inclusive development together with other youth.
YB Stephen, I imagine you're going to be very busy with developments in Parliament, but are there specific initiatives that you're pushing for?
I think at the end of the day, the government should be dealing with the cause of the problem, not to just treat symptoms, not to just deal with youth unemployment, retraining, graduates retraining, and these billion ringgit budget items, you know, graduate retraining or youth and social issues, crime, welfare. No, I think what we should do is to refocus our resources to deal with the cause of the problem, to deal with the root cause, and that means education. And education at the earliest level possible. Deal with early childhood education, because the money we spend, the money we invest in a child today has a ripple effect, you know, for decades to come. So I think we should deal with that. Government should confront this problem, this glaring problem of our education system. In Penang, I can't say much for the federal government because I'm in the opposition, and my role is to advocate and to highlight issues and also give suggestions to the federal government. But in Penang, for example, the state government, even though education is not part of the government's jurisdiction at the state level, but we are doing our very best to promote skill development. In fact, the latest announcement was a German dual vocational training with the state government partnering with local tertiary institution as well as the industry, bringing all these three parties together to provide quality vocational training at a diploma level, in fact, at an advanced diploma level to young people who may not be, you know, your typical university type of youth. So this is another option for them. I think this is what we should do, and this is what we should focus on, education. From the start, at the youngest level.
All right, folks, we've been speaking about the issue of youth unemployment in Malaysia. My guests, Stephen Sim, MP for Bukit Matajam, as well as Sharina Hisham, Senior Executive for Business Development from the organization My Harapan. To find out more, you can head over to www.myharapan.org. It's the evening edition. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast at www.bfm.my, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.